on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Linda Kenyon. Israel is urging Palestinian civilians to move to a safe area near Egypt as warplanes are striking Hamas targets in Gaza. CBS's Robert Berger reports from Jerusalem.
The Israeli military says it has attacked more than 400 Hamas targets since the ceasefire collapsed yesterday. One of the main targets is the southern Gaza town of Khan Yunis. That's where Hamas leaders and fighters are believed to be hiding out in underground tunnels.
Israel blames Hamas for the collapse of the temporary ceasefire and the breakdown in talks that had been aimed at extending that fragile pause. At the COP28 climate summit in Dubai, Vice President Kamala Harris outlined the Biden administration's ongoing efforts to combat global warming.
Today, I am also proud to announce a new $3 billion pledge to the Green Climate Fund, which helps developing countries invest in resilience, clean energy, and nature-based solutions.
Some 150 world leaders are attending the conference. Leaders in Austin, Texas, say they've come up with some solutions to deal with severe winter weather. KEYE-TV's Fred Cantu reports they've learned some lessons from recent extreme weather events.
Austin Mayor Kirk Watson says city utilities are now better prepared to weather the storm and to reduce lost service while keeping customers informed of their progress. And first responders report they've also beefed up their cold weather capabilities, but want as many people as possible out of the cold before it gets dangerous.
The inmate accused of stabbing former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin 22 times has been charged with attempted murder. CBS's Jeff Glore has details.
Federal prosecutors say former Mexican mafia gang leader and FBI informant John Tursak attacked Chauvin last Friday in the law library at a medium security prison in Tucson, Arizona. Prosecutors say Tursak said he targeted Chauvin because of his notoriety for killing George Floyd in 2020 and that he'd been thinking of attacking Chauvin for about a month. The prison says that life-saving measures were used before they rushed Chauvin to a hospital for further treatment.
A new $90 million satellite called MethaneSat is being built by the Environmental Defense Fund, in part founded by Amazon founder Jeff Bezos.
They plan to launch it next year atop a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket. Once in orbit, it will find and map methane leaks around the world 24 hours a day.
That's CBS's Ben Tracy reporting on that satellite. And this is CBS News.
Today, better nutrition and great taste are more important than ever. That's why Eggland's Best gives you and your family more. And that's healthy news for everyone. Only Eggland's Best.
I'm Dr. Short.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Dow. Farmers and people who live in flood-prone communities are looking to policymakers to improve the health of Wisconsin's soil. Mike Mohn has more.
Congress will soon renew debate over long-term farm bill funding, including incentives for producers to adopt practices like no-till farming, which allow the soil to hold more water after heavy rain. Julio Badinsky is a consultant for the Michael Fields Agricultural Institute and says this isn't just an issue for farmers and policymakers. She says taxpayer dollars come into play when these programs are underfunded.
Some of the costs that they pay because of the lack of investment in soil health practices, especially municipalities, rural communities, even state budgets, when they're looking at costs to repair flooding damages.
Between 2009 and 2019, Wisconsin suffered nearly $36 million in flood damage. On the flip side, she says soil health investment and improved water quality pay off for communities, such as boosting home values along watersheds. These discussions also follow recent conservation funding boosts from the Inflation Reduction Act, with advocates noting they're poised to help more rural areas. South Central Wisconsin farmer Ron Shep is among those who have tapped into IRA incentives this year through the Federal Conservation Stewardship Program, providing benefits that reach beyond his property.
We farm right on Lake Wisconsin. And so
there's less runoff. And so that definitely helps the neighbors by keeping a cleaner Lake Wisconsin.
He also contends that making these incentives more accessible could place less stress on disaster aid programs for farmers. Congress has until next fall to adopt a new farm bill after extending the recent version for another year. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 30s. For tonight, some rain and snow. We'll see a low around 30 degrees, less than a half inch of snow accumulation. Some rain-snow mix for your Sunday, cloudy skies with a high near 37. Monday, mostly cloudy with a high near 39.
It's 21 right now.
Local talk about our hometown and all of Wisconsin has gone untapped until now. You're on 93.5 The Tap. Make sure and tell your friends. UK.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel. You don't know me, but I'm your brother. Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel. This is our Saturday morning broadcast. Thank you for joining me and my wonderful producer, Greg, here in the studios of the Civic Media outlets throughout the state of Wisconsin. Thank you for spending some time with us in this, our second hour of the broadcast, talking as we always do about the aspiration for justice in America, law, government, issues and animating our lives, our livelihoods. And speaking this morning about some updates coming out of our federal courts, our state courts as well, having to do with the major pieces of litigation pending in those courts. Right before the top of the hour break, talking about a major decision issued by Judge Tanya Chutkan. She is a federal district court judge in the District of Columbia. She is presiding over what will be a trial in March of next year. That's when she has scheduled the trial of this very, very important major indictment charging Donald Trump with four different counts of election interference, that being prosecuted by the U.S. Department of Justice and Jack Smith, who, of course, is the special counsel there. She has before her this request by the defense to dismiss the case based upon the notion, the doctrine, the argument that Donald Trump, by virtue of his status as the president, was immune from any sort of criminal prosecution like this. Judge Tanya Chutkan just this past week recognizing that she is obliged to respond in these pretrial periods to those kinds of motions, basically saying these arguments are not valid at all, rejecting those, saying that indeed he is not immune from criminal prosecution. Along the way, saying some very important things about the rule of law generally when it comes to any president, any person in the federal district court. In a ruling, Judge Chutkan said that the office of the presidency does not confer a lifelong, as she described it, get out of jail free pass. That's what she writes in her omnibus order, dismissing this notion that there is immunity that attaches to the former president. She said former presidents enjoy no special conditions on their federal criminal liability. This defendant may be subject to federal investigation, indictment, prosecution, conviction, and punishment for any criminal acts undertaken while in office. And she's probably referencing there the notion that, again, there is this internal memorandum inside the Department of Justice that says when there is a sitting president that person, whoever that person may be, not subject as a policy matter, not a legislative matter, not a judicial finding, that indeed there should be some consideration for the presidency during the time in office. But she's saying that this defendant can, in fact, be subject to criminal prosecution for the things that he did when he's out of office now. That's Tanya Chutkan's great statement about the rule of law just this past week. She also rejected Trump's claims that this indictment somehow violates his rights under the Constitution generally, his free speech rights, his First Amendment rights, obviously especially important at a time when he is out there campaigning for the presidency. We know that with respect to that matter, the case that is the challenge to her imposition of a so-called gag order, restrictive order, that's pending before the D.C. Court of Appeals, just like the case involving the New York judge, Judge Engoron, actually referred to as Justice Engoron. He presides in the Superior Court there. That's the way they describe them in New York. That particular case has its parallel in the federal system. Judge Chutkan's similar order directing that this defendant not, in fact, engage in the kinds of incendiary statements that he has made in the past. That's also pending right now before the Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia, the federal court. And it sounded from the oral argument of a couple of weeks ago that the Court of Appeals is probably going to affirm that lower court order, but also saying along the way that there may be some accommodations that can be made under the First Amendment that do not implicate and do not affect the conduct of the trial before Judge Chutkan. The court in Judge Chutkan's ruling on the immunity issue, this major petition for dismissal, also said it is well established that the First Amendment does not protect speech that is used as an instrument of crime. That's what she said just this past week. The defendant is not being prosecuted simply for making false statements, but rather for knowingly making false statements in furtherance of a criminal conspiracy and obstructing the electoral process. That's what Judge Chutkan wrote in dismissing this notion that the case should be dismissed based upon immunity principles. All of this happening at the same time that the D.C. Court of Appeals, same venue, different court, higher court, addressed also in an order just issued yesterday a somewhat similar situation, a somewhat similar set of doctrines about whether or not there is immunity, this one having to do with some civil lawsuits have been brought by House Democrats in the House of Representatives, and some officers who were involved in trying to protect our Capitol on January 6th. And in particular, they allege that they were injured in that riot. They have brought a civil lawsuit in federal court, as have others in the federal court, alleging that Donald Trump is responsible for the injuries that they suffered, both as members of Congress and these particular officers as well, and that his conduct is directly attributable to the kinds of injuries that they suffered, that he should be held, according to the civil complaint in those cases, accountable for his conduct in inciting the riot that caused this disruption. More than 2 years later, these cases continue to percolate up and around. And as a result of that, the appeals court addressing whether or not those civil cases should be permitted to go ahead, be tried in a district court, the district court in District of Columbia, just yesterday issued a major order. This, again, the U.S. Court of Appeals in the District of Columbia, basically knocking down Donald Trump's very sweeping claims that presidential immunity, again, the same concept in this civil environment, somehow shields him from liability in these civil lawsuits brought by the lawmakers, the legislators, the Democrats in Congress, and also these police officers. The three-judge panel that made this decision, again, permitting the lawsuit to go ahead, also said that he can continue to fight in this trial. He can continue to present evidence, doesn't shut him down entirely. But just that the notion of immunity, at least at this stage in the proceedings, is not a bar to the case going ahead. Trump had said that he can't be sued over his role, whatever that may have been in the riot, because of these are matters of public concern, that, again, he is immune from this kind of prosecution, and it is absolute presidential immunity. The Court of Appeals, like Judge Tanya Chutkan, the lower court in the criminal case, just yesterday finding just the opposite, rejecting what Donald Trump and his lawyers have said. and telling him that indeed the case will go ahead. The principal judge of the three-judge panel wrote this. He said, he is acting as an office seeker, not an office holder. No less than are the persons running against him when they take precisely the same actions in their competing campaigns to attain precisely the same office. In other words, he is serving in a campaign role there, not doing anything in the scope of his actual duties and responsibilities. And for that reason, immunity does not attach. So major cases coming out of state and federal district and appeals courts just in recent days affecting the future of those prosecutions and permitting them to go ahead and affirming them, at least as to the federal case in front of Judge Chutkan, this fundamental notion and also the civil case that the immunity doctrine that does apply in some instances does not apply here when the defendant is not acting in the scope of his official duties and responsibilities, but serving simply as a campaign advocate for his own candidacy for the presidency. An important concept. No one is above the law. That's what the courts are saying. We always appreciate your calls, your comments. And indeed, we've got a caller this morning, Dana from La Crosse. Appreciate your calling in this morning to be a part of our discussion. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. It's been a while.
Glad to have you with us, Dana, right?
You betcha. Rest assured, I'm still listening every weekend.
Wonderful.
It's just a great show. I think the time slot you have here, this is definitely the best thing available on any airwaves. And I hope you're getting more and more listeners to discover you every weekend.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And spread the word. We always appreciate also your calling in and with comments and questions.
You betcha. I'd like to visit the gag order issue. We all know what he's up to with all his tweets and his attacks on basically anybody involved with any of these trials, and then down to their wives and everything. It's just incredible. And then whining about, and he's got his surrogates doing the same about how he's being persecuted and not being allowed to, you know, discuss the trials and everything, to defend himself publicly. When we all know, you know, those of us that aren't enamored with his dazzling personality, we all know that he's been given more leeway than anybody in this country would ever be given, and definitely a two-tiered system there, but not in the way they want to define it. What I am wondering, Jim, is a possible scenario that I think could happen. And let's say the trial doesn't end up the way we are all hoping and thinking it definitely should.